Hare Krishna. Welcome once again to this seminar on the sacred rivers of India. This is day two. For those of you who were not here yesterday, after a brief introduction about the importance of rivers in general, and also specifically about the sacred rivers of India, we began a discussion on the holy Ganga. And we could not complete the discussion last night, so we will continue today. And remember that when we even mention the names, we utter the names of these holy rivers, we become purified. The scriptures say that what to speak of actually bathing in the Ganga, what to speak of taking darshan of the Ganga, worshipping the Ganga, serving the Ganga physically, but even desiring to go to the Ganga has an effect of purifying our heart. And when we utter the syllables Ganga, then all the sins go far away and attraction to Lord Krishna develops. Ganga. Ganga, 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 He Gange, He Gange, He Gange, He is a form of address. So when you address someone, you say He, so especially a respectable personality. So Ganga, when it's addressed, she's addressed as Gange. So, hey Yamune, hey Narmade, like that. That's the way it's done. So, after having discussed the glories of Ganga, the geography, the history, we're discussing some more of the history. But this is not history that you are taught in your schools, because this history is much more ancient. And it's given in the Puranas, the ancient scriptures of India. People think that these are mythological stories, but they are not. They are actually historical events that have happened in bygone ages, long, long, long years ago. In some cases, millions upon millions of years ago. And they have been transmitted down the generations. And whenever there has been some break in that transmission, somehow or the other, by the arrangement of the Lord, great sages like Vyasadeva have brought forth this information, this knowledge once again. Such knowledge has been revealed to them internally as well as externally. So the history of the descent of Ganga into the material world is quite interesting. And we had begun, what is one? Okay, here we are. So this is where we had stopped last year, yesterday. Yes, time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world, so... So there was a king, and this narration appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and with some variation it appears in the Valmiki Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, in various Puranas like the Brahmanda Purana, the Markandeya Purana. Something happened? So there will be variations in these narrations that we read in the different scriptures, but as I mentioned yesterday, it's because of Kalpa Bheda and different pastimes that have happened over the eons in the past. There are some slight variations like this. So anyway, let's discuss the narration as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's mentioned that there was a king called Sagar. And he performed what is known as the Ashvamedha Yajna a horse sacrifice, and in the course of that, the horse was let loose into the land, and wherever the horse went, according to its sweet will, that land was said to be conquered by the king that sent the horse. And if anybody stopped the horse, then it meant that that king was opposing the suzerainty of that emperor who sent the horse, and there would be a fight, because the soldiers of that king would move along with that horse. So one time Indra, he stole and hid the horse that was sent by King Sagar. Now the 60,000 sons of Sagar could not locate the horse, so they searched here and there, and they dug up large portions of the earth, which eventually became the oceans, and that's why they're called Sagar. From Sagar comes Sagar. Yes. And they came upon the sage Kapila, who was... Okay. And they thought that the sage Kapila had actually stolen the horse, because they found the horse moving around in his ashram, but he was absorbed in meditation. So when these princes, the 60,000 princes, accused the sage Kapila wrongly of having stolen the horse, and they advanced menacingly towards him, merely by his fiery glance, he burnt them all to ashes. So these 60,000 sons lay there in a heap in the form of ashes. King Sagara was extremely grief-stricken at this development, and he tried in some way to rectify the situation, but before he could, he left this world, he passed away. His son Asamanjas was not suitable for the task. Asamanjas' son, his name was Anshuman. He performed penances for a long time to propitiate Mother Ganga. He had come actually searching for his grand uncles, and he found the heap of ashes in the ashram of sage Kapila. Kapila, being very kind to Anshuman, who was very respectful and well-behaved as opposed to his granduncles, he said, "There is nothing from this planet that can deliver your granduncles, your forefathers, but it's only the waters of the heavenly Ganga that can do the job." So then Anshuman began penance for propitiating Mother Ganga, but he was unsuccessful, so his whole life passed like that. His son was Dilip, who also became king after him. Dilip also was unsuccessful in this endeavor. His whole life passed by, performing penances just to bring Mother Ganga down to earth. Imagine, a whole lifetime going for a purpose like this, for worshipping. And he is also therefore a very famous king. His life went by, and then his son's name was Bhagirath. Bhagirath also performed penances for a long time, but finally he was indeed able to please Mother Ganga. But she said, "Even if I do agree to come to earth, I worry about who will be able to bear the force of my descent, because my waters will flow so powerfully that they will sweep away everything and everyone. And secondly, I also fear that when I come on earth, which is full of sinful people, and especially in the years to come, the ages to come, people will become more and more sinful, so they will come and bathe in my pure waters, which have the capacity to cleanse the sinful reaction of everyone. They will come and dump their sins in me, and I will become overburdened with these sins, and I will be unable to bear this." So Bhagirath was very intelligent. He said, "O goddess, you need not worry on both these accounts. When the great devotees of Lord Krishna come and bathe in your waters, They will even purify your waters. So you will become relieved of the burden of the sins that would have been deposited in your waters by the sinful people of this earth planet. And as far as bearing the force of your waters, I will request Lord Shiva to come and do the needful. So then, Bhagirath sat for long years to propitiate Lord Shiva now. Lord Shiva is also Ashutosh. He is very easily pleased. So he appeared and he agreed to bear the force of the waters of Ganga upon his matted locks of hair. And then eventually that happened. Yes, so Bhagirath petitioned Ganga and she came, and Lord Shiva held her waters within the matted locks of hair. There are very interesting variations of this pastime. In the Ramayana, for example, it is mentioned that Ganga had a little mischievous twinkle in her eye, and she was thinking, let me play some pranks on Lord Shiva, but she chose the wrong person. She said, let me sweep him away a little bit. So she came down, and Lord Shiva, being very intelligent, understood that she was up to some mischief. So he just kept her so tightly within his matted locks that she was swirling and swirling around within the matted locks, and not a drop was escaping. Finally she understood who Lord Shiva was and his greatness, and she surrendered. And then Lord Shiva let out a stream. So when you see pictures of Lord Shiva, you will see that from his matted locks comes a little stream. Yes, it comes in a very organized way. So Lord Shiva is called Gangadhara, one who holds Goddess Ganga upon his head, in the matted locks of his hair. So anyway, Ganga was released from his matted locks, and is, maybe he's outside, maybe you can call him and see if this. It wouldn't be nice if we don't get have the pictures here. It's going to come back again? Yes? Okay, all right. So Bhagirath then was very happy. And as Ganga flowed from the top of Lord Shiva's head, she came onto the Himalaya mountains, Himavat. And then, as we have discussed yesterday, there was a glacier, the Gangotri Glacier, and there's Gomukh, and she started flowing down the Himalayas. And as she did that, King Bhagirath was on his chariot, and he asked Ganga to please follow him, because he wanted to lead her to where the ashes of his forefathers were. And so he was driving his chariot very swiftly, because the flow of Ganga was also very rapid. In fact, as I mentioned yesterday, the very word Ganga means one who flows very swiftly. So she followed behind. And wherever there were mountains and there were obstructions, Bhagirath would maneuver and go around, and Ganga would follow. At one point, they passed through the ashram of Rishi Janu, and he swallowed her, and at the request of Bhagirath, he released her from his ear. So she is known as Jahnavi. And because she descended at the request of Bhagirath, she is called Bhagirathi. So here is Bhagirath leading Ganga as she flows down. Yes. This is again the descent of Lord Ganga. So this is how Ganga came, and finally the waters of the Ganga reached the ashes of Bhagirath's forefathers, and they were delivered. So this is as far as the descent of Ganga on the earth planet is concerned. And she moved into the ocean. And then from the ocean, actually, as per the Lord's desire, she moved to the nether regions, to the Patala Loka. And in the Patala Loka, she is known as Bhogavati. Yesterday I mentioned she has names. She is known as something in the heavenly planets, something on earth, and something in the Patala Loka. Does anyone remember? What is she known in the heavenly planets as? Mandakini. On earth as Ganga. And in Patala Loka as? Bhogavati. That's right. So now we all know that she entered in, she is the water of the causal ocean. She came in through the hole in the universe that was made by the lotus toenail of Vamanadev. And that's how she came into the universe. And then she landed on earth because of the efforts of these great kings like Sagar and Anshuman, Dilip, and finally Bhagirath. But does Ganga have any existence in the spiritual world? Yes, indeed. Ganga exists also in the spiritual world. And in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there are some nice descriptions of this pastime. Yes. 1 minute. Yeah. So one time, there was a festival in Goloka Vrindavan, in honor of Srimati Radharani. And Krishna was worshipping Srimati Radharani in the Rasa Mandal in Goloka Vrindavan. Many exalted personalities came there to worship the lordships. Goddess Saraswati in the spiritual world was playing the musical instrument known as the Veena. Lord Shiva sang in such a melodious way that it was simply nectar. And when everybody heard this beautiful singing of Lord Shiva, in great ecstasy, they all fell unconscious. And when they came to external consciousness again, they saw that Radha and Krishna were not there, and instead the whole Rasa Mandala was filled with water, it was flooded. And that's when they understood that Radha and Krishna had melted completely and become liquid. They had taken liquid forms. And this liquid form became known as Ganga. And because they are the forms, the liquefied forms of these waters are the liquefied form of Radha and Krishna, they have the power to bestow bhakti or pure devotion to the Lord. There are some other similar pastimes like this as well. It's also mentioned that that Ganga appeared from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. She hid herself in the lotus feet. And then she manifested there and she flowed into the Kamandalu, or the water pot of Brahma. And there's also another pastime that's mentioned there, that Krishna's body melted upon seeing the sweetness of Narad Muni and his devotion. And then that liquefied form of Krishna became Ganga. So these are the pastimes mentioned in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So having spoken about that, let's now talk about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He appeared here. He is the same Krishna who came to relish Krishna Prem, specifically the love of Srimati Radharani for Krishna. He wanted to relish that. And he appeared here in Navadvip, on the bank of the Ganga. It is said that because Krishna had appeared in Vrindavan, and Yamuna had been witness to his pastimes there, and she had been able to experience the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, Ganga was also thinking, well, I am somewhat deprived. So when will the Lord appear and bestow upon me the same fortune that he bestowed upon Yamuna? So in order to fulfill her desires, Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the banks of the Ganga. And Ganga then was a recipient of the unlimited mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would bathe in her waters every day. And there were many, many pastimes that happened there. But time does not permit us to discuss these things, these pastimes. Perhaps at the time of God Purnima. So it is well known that bathing in the Ganga has enormous benefits. And therefore people in large numbers who are very faithful, they come and religiously bathe in the Ganga. It is said that there are two types of benefits that accrue to one who faithfully bathes in the Ganga. There are external benefits and there are also internal benefits. The external benefits are, of course, that not only does the body physically become clean, but one also becomes immune to varieties of diseases. Srila Prabhupada mentions the case of a respectable gentleman from Calcutta whom he knew, who never in his life took any medicine from a doctor. He would simply go and bathe in the Ganga, and thus he would get relieved from all disease. He would never fall sick, actually, because he was every day bathing in the Ganga. Now, this seems a little strange. It's a mystery about this property of Ganga, which she has self-cleansing and healing properties. You know, Ganga water is the only river water that can remain fresh and pure even after that water is stored for a long, long time. Waters in other rivers, and some of them, even if they are sacred, may not remain pure for so long. So what is it about the Ganga water that makes it remain fresh? And what is it about Ganga that heals? Why is it that the water of the Ganga doesn't cause diseases, rather it heals diseases? For one thing, scientists have discovered that there is a very high level of oxygen content in Ganga. Now, this scientific study of Ganga is a topic in itself. Perhaps with time it could have another 20 minutes easily one can talk about this. So many scientists even today have studied it. But the study began in the late 19th century. There was some gentleman, a doctor, bacteriologist called Ernest Henkins. He studied the Ganga water and found that the cholera bacteria, when placed in Ganga water, did not survive. They died. And then he studied further and he took this Ganga water and filtered it and found that the antibacterial properties of the Ganga were not destroyed. But when he boiled the water, then they were destroyed. In other words, when you take the Ganga water as it is, then these bacteriophagal properties, anyone, microbiologist here, anyone? No, microbiologists here. So bacteriophagal properties, which means there are certain types of entities that kill the harmful bacteria. And they don't kill the good bacteria. You know, we also have good bacteria in our system and they are essential. And therefore, sometimes when you take antibiotics, you have to take probiotics, right, to generate the good bacteria. So Ganga water, it preserves the good bacteria, but it kills the bad bacteria. So it's called bacteriophagal. Am I right? You have a doctor here, Sundarananda Prabhu. Bacteriophagal, yes, properties. So this doctor discovered this, and after that, in the last century, there have been numerous tests conducted. And they found that indeed that is so, and it's only so with Ganga water and not with other rivers or water from the ponds and lakes and so on. So very mysterious, somehow or the other it's there. Also because it has a very high oxygen content, and therefore is able to remain fresh and pure somehow for a long period of time. So this is a very, very interesting thing. Different sources of water have different cleansing and healing powers according to their source. And of them all, the Ganga and Yamuna are considered the best. And then you have waters of other holy rivers, and there is a hierarchy going on to certain lakes and ponds and wells and springs and so on and so forth. So the Ganga is the best amongst all pure waters for external cleanliness. When it comes to internal cleanliness also, the Ganga is very, very powerful. Anyone who bathes in the Ganga becomes free from the effects of sinful reactions. But Srila Prabhupada cautions that one must not commit sinful activities once one has bathed in the Ganga. So that is called Kunjara Shaucha. Have you ever heard about elephants bathing? They go and bathe in the river, and right after that, they come and roll in the mud on the banks of the river. So they clean themselves, but right after that, they come and roll and dirty themselves again. So if we also go into the Ganga, and we cleanse ourselves of sinful reactions, then come out, again commit sins, then go back to the Ganga. So that's not a very nice thing to do. It's pointless. So one must be cautious to not do that in order to gain the full benefit of bathing in the Ganga. The bondage from the cycle of birth and death can be relieved for one who regularly bathes in the Ganga. And Srila Prabhupada mentions another very important point, which is the real purpose of bathing in the Ganga, that it develops one's devotional attitude towards the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada says here, so these are some pictures, and I'll read this purport from Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 41. The Lord is so kind that He has spread the river Ganges throughout the universe, so that by taking bath in that holy river, everyone can get release from the reactions of sins which occur at every step. There are many rivers in the world which are able to evoke one's sense of God consciousness simply by one's bathing in them, and the river Ganges is chief amongst them. In India there are 5 sacred rivers, but the Ganges is the most sacred. The river Ganges and Bhagavad Gita are chief sources of transcendental happiness for mankind, and intelligent persons can take shelter of them to go back home, back to Godhead. Even Sripad Shankaracharya recommends that a little knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and the drinking of a little quantity of Ganges water can save one from the punishment of Yamaraj. So the quote of Shankaracharya that Prabhupada is referring to here is from the Bhajagovindam prayers of Shankaracharya. And this particular verse here is, Bhagavad Gita kinchid dhita, Ganga jalalava kanika pita, sakrit api yena murari samarcha, triyete tasya yamena na charcha. Triyete tasya, these 3 things, if you do, then you won't have to engage in a debate with Yamaraj. When does one have to engage in a debate with Yamaraj? At the time of death, when he comes to take away our soul from the body. And then we may argue with him and say, no, it's not me, it's not time for me to go, please go to my neighbor, he's the one. You know, don't come here, it's a wrong number, you've probably made a mistake, don't come here. So no need to argue with Yamaraj, because Yamaraj will not come to you. So what are those 3 things which, if done, will prevent such arguments and debates with Yamaraj? First, Bhagavad Gita kinchid dhita. Just a little study of the Bhagavad Gita. Ganga jal lava kanika pita. Just a little palmful of Ganga water, Ganga jal, if you drink. Sakrit api yena murari samarcha. Even once if you worship Murari or Krishna. So if you do these 3 things, Yamaraj will keep away from you. So Ganga, bathing in the Ganga with this devotional attitude, mind you, is important. It should not be like the bathing of the elephant. So here are some pictures. You have many sadhus who come there, especially at Kumbh Mela time. Any of you have been to Kumbh Mela? It's the largest religious gathering on earth. Millions and millions of people gather there at one time. It's a sight to behold. It's an experience of a lifetime. If you really want to know what the diverse spiritual and religious traditions of India are and how faith drives millions upon millions to come here and brave the fierce cold there, and they bathe in that icy cold water of the Ganga and the Yamuna at that confluence, then you have to go to the Kumbh Mela. ISKCON also has a very active camp there with many tents. And if you book in advance, you can also go there and live in that tent and you can enjoy this festival that goes on there. And of course, there is Ganga worship, Ganga Arati. Ganga is, you know, the worship of Ganga is also very important in devotional service. We know that Advaita Acharya, Haridas Thakur, they worshipped Ganga with Tulsi Manjaris and they offered this to Shalagram Shila to petition the Lord to appear on earth. And that's why Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As one of the limbs of devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that living in a sacred place like the banks of the Ganga is one of the regulative principles of devotional service. Now, we may ask, is it practical for the modern day world? Well, perhaps it is. A temple is also a sacred place. The temple where Lord Krishna has descended. So if you live close to a temple, you're living close to a sacred place. And if you're living in the temple, then you're living in the sacred place. So at least if you can't live close to the temple, try to come often to the temple and go to devotional gatherings. So that's also like living in Dwarka or Ganga and so on. And also visiting the course of the Ganga stimulates our devotion. It's also considered tadiya upasana. Tadiya refers to that which is connected to the Supreme Lord. You know, of the ninefold system of devotional service, as enunciated by Prahlad in the Srimad Bhagavatam, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc., there is Pada Sevanam. Pada Sevanam means serving the lotus feet of the Lord. This means remembering the Lord's lotus feet. When this lotus, the remembrance of the lotus feet expands, Srila Prabhupada explains, it moves into various other types of activities like using our feet to circumambulate the temple of the Lord or to circumambulate the dham, the holy places of the Lord, and so on. And included in this expanded conception of serving the lotus feet of the Lord is serving all that is connected to the Lord. Serving the devotees, the Vaishnavas, serving Tulsi, serving Ganga, serving Yamuna, serving the cow. These are all part of Tadiya Seva or Tadiya Upasana. So serving the Ganga, therefore, is one of the limbs of devotional service for us as faithful devotees of the Lord. We see one of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually all the associates of Mahaprabhu in Navadvip used to worship the Ganga. Specifically, we have heard about Sridhar Kolavecha, who would give 50% of his income for the worship of Mother Ganga. And we see here in Haridwar especially, Ganga Arati is just magnificent. It's just so devotional. Even if you're not part there, you're just there. It's an experience, actually. So the service to Mother Ganga is glorious. And as I said, even if you just remember Ganga and chant her names, you can get purified. So let's do it once again. Ganga. 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 Hey Gange. Hey Gange. So she is our beloved mother. In her shelter, she will give us pure devotion to her Lord and Master, Sri Krishna. So, Actually, as I mentioned yesterday, that Ganga is a topic you can speak for all the 4 days of this katha. Likewise with Yamuna. So, but we have to finish many sacred rivers in these 4 days. So now we'll move on to Yamuna. River Yamuna. Very, very fascinating. Ganga and Yamuna, of course, are the two most famous sacred rivers of India. And for us as devotees of Krishna, and specifically devotees of Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan, Yamuna is particularly important. Because the connection of Yamuna with Vrindavan and Vrajalila and the Krishna of Vrindavan is very intimate and very deep. Very esoteric as well. So for us, the river Yamuna is especially important. And again, you can one can have a 4-day seminar just on Yamuna. But we'll try to condense it. Now we're already at a time, I don't think I'll be able to complete Yamuna today, even whatever I had planned to, but we'll spill over, never mind. We'll cut down on the other sacred rivers, because Ganga, Yamuna are so important for us, so it's worth giving this much time. You will remember from our discussion yesterday, this map. Yes? And we have the four dhams. It's called the Char Dham Yatra, the Four Dham Yatra. You have, from the east to the west, you have Badrinath, Kedarnath, Gangotri and Yamunotri. Badrinath is a place of Badri Vishal, Lord Vishnu. Kedarnath is a place of Lord Shiva, who is also known as Kedarnath. Gangotri is the origin of the Ganga. And the westernmost of the four dhams is Yamunotri, which is the origin of the river Yamuna. After flowing down from the Yamunotri, she flows down the Himalayas and then flows into the plains, and eventually, after touching many important cities like Kurukshetra and Delhi and Agra, Vrindavan of course before that, then she moves on and joins the Ganga at the modern day city of Allahabad, also called Prayagraj. But before we come to Allahabad, let's trace the course of the Ganga, of the Yamuna, from the very beginning of her manifest presence on this planet. So let's go to Yamunotri. How many of you have been to Yamunotri? Okay, very nice. I remember our journey to Yamunotri, going through those hills. By the time we reached, it was quite late. It was almost sunset when we reached the point below. And we had to travel up. And these roads are very narrow. And we were about 300 devotees. So we had taken many buses, large buses, which could accommodate 50 each. And there were many buses, 9 or 10 buses or whatever number, and going up. And the only people who came out kind of in, shall we say, stable minds were those who were asleep, who had fallen asleep. It's such a delicate balance there. The bus is moving on, a little movement this way and you're down the cliff. And everybody had their hearts in their mouths as they were sitting there, especially those who were awake, but those who were asleep, ignorance is bliss. So they didn't realize what had happened. But those who were awake, and they were looking, and I don't think they have chanted better rounds, japa, in their life. Everybody was just going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the drivers were happy-go-lucky. They didn't worry, and you know, so they were used to all this. But as devotees, we weren't used to it. And I also remember intensely praying because, you know, you had to go slow. But this area is famous for landslides and all that. And just some time before we went, there had been landslides. So anyway, we somehow or the other reached. And although it was very cold, but many of us were perspiring after that because, you know, it's a question of so many lives. I don't want to scare you, but, you know, that's part of this whole journey. And take smaller buses, then it's easier because less risk involved. But you should remember not to drive too fast. So anyway, we reached Yamunotri. Not Yamunotri by road, by car. You have to come to a place called Janaki Chatti. I'll show you pictures of that. And then Yamunotri is 6 kilometers by walk. So you have to trek 6 kilometers in the mountains. And then you go there. So this is another picture of Yamunotri temple. There's a temple there at Yamunotri. And this temple has deities of Yamuna and Ganga. They are sisters of sorts. And the deity of Yamuna is made of black marble. This temple is open from Akshay Tritiya to Deepavali. It's a very beautiful scenic setting. This deity is said to be almost 5,000 years old. And before we come to that, let's go above to the actual source of the Yamuna. The Yamunotri is a general area where the Yamuna is said to have originated, but actually the origin is way above in the mountains. You have to climb further. It's, I think, a one day or 2 day trek. And it's a very difficult trek. Very few can do it. You really have to be physically fit to do it. And you have to have a guide, an experienced guide with you. And then you can make it. You can come up to this place, which is called the Saptarishi Kund. This is where the Yamunotri is. There is a glacier here. The glacier is a Yamunotri glacier, also sometimes called the Champasar glacier. So it is this glacier that feeds the lake, which is called Saptarishi Kund. And this is perched atop a flank of the Bandar Poonch mountain. For those of you who know Hindi, the word Bandar Poonch means Bandar means a monkey and Poonch means the tail. And Bandar Poonch because it is said that Hanuman, after he had burnt Lanka, because Ravan set his tail on fire, if you remember your Ramayana, and then he burned down the whole of Lanka, and later he flew to this place and immersed his tail in this kund here. So therefore that whole mountain range there, or a portion of that, is called the Bandar Poonch. And I'll show you pictures of that in a while. So the current runs northward at Yamunotri, you see. When the water emanates from Saptarishi Kund and goes down to Yamunotri, and there's a small northward turn. That's why the place is called Yamunotri. Yamuna and Uttar. Uttar means north. Yes? Yamuna Uttari. It's considered an auspicious direction to turn. So she turns like that. So that place is called Yamunotri. But anyway, this Saptarishi Lake is about 10 kilometers from Yamunotri temple. It's about half a kilometer in diameter. And the water is dark blue in color. So this glacier, the Yamunotri glacier, is nestled into a steep slope just below the crest of a mountain which is called Kalinda, which is west of and behind the Bandar Poonch mountain. And this Kalinda, the word Kalinda refers to the sun. And because Yamuna comes from the Kalinda mountain, she's called Kalindi. And she also happens to be the daughter of the sun god. And we'll come to that in a few minutes. Not a few minutes, I think. It'll take a while to come to that point. So the Saptarishi Kund is where the Ganga water accumulates from the glacier. And then she flows down. And she divides, and this Bandar Poonch mountain range actually divides the watershed of the Ganga and the Yamuna. So on the other side of the mountains, you have the Ganga flowing, and on this side you have the Yamuna flowing. And then she cascades down the southern face of this Kalinda mountain. And there's so many waterfalls there in that whole area. Actually, it is a trekker's delight. And even for a devotee, you come there, your Shantarasa will definitely get aroused. Shantarasa is a way of appreciating the glory of the Lord. Yes? So then, the Saptarishikund, the water flows. This is a view of the lake, which becomes a river, then flows as Yamuna. It's surrounded by magnificent glaciers. And in this lake you also find the well-known Brahma lotus. You also have, this place is also the origin of the precious blue sapphire stones. The origin here at this lake. The Sapta Rishis, and that's how they got the name, the seven sages came here and performed austerities. That's why the name Saptarishi Kund. I haven't been there. We didn't climb up. There was no way we could have done it with 300 people going up. But perhaps one day, I don't think I'll ever be able to go up there, that two-day trek, and it's bitterly cold. So one has to really be an experienced trekker to make it up there. And then here is Yamunotri with the Kalinda mountain in the background. Then here is Yamuna or Kalindi at Yamunotri as she flows down. And here is the Kalinda mountain. Another view of the Kalinda mountain as seen from Yamunotri. And this is the Bandar Poonch mountain. It has its three peaks. This is also a favorite of mountain climbers and trekkers. They climb up and they pitch tents on the way. It's pretty high. I don't know what the altitude is. Again, another view of these mountains, Bandar Poonch. So coming down to Yamunotri again, it's very interesting that the water of the Yamuna is extremely cold, icy cold. I remember in Badrinath, what you have to do is, we did that the first time. Of course, that time I was 30 years younger, so we could do that. We had to take bath in those cold waters. And then you take bath in the hot spring and then go back to the cold water again. So that was what we did in Badrinath in the first time we went. So these places in the Himalayas, you'll see, it's unique. You have this cold, icy water coming from the Himalayas, from the hills, and you also have hot springs that come from within the earth. So just as there is such a thing at Badrinath, also in Yamunotri, we will see that. And there are many hot springs, and the most famous one amongst them is called Surya Kund. So this Surya Kund is a place where pilgrims take in a muslin cloth, they keep potatoes and raw rice, and they just dip it there and it gets boiled. And that's considered offered to Yamuna Devi. So they take it back as prasad of Yamuna. So the hot potato, you get boiled potatoes, jacket potatoes you can get, and rice. And then you take that as prasadam, and so we also tried that. You have a lot of people who sell potatoes there and rice over there, you know. But people bring it there. So this water is boiling hot, so you obviously can't take a bath in that. So what's done is that they have made another kund called the Jamunabai Kund, where the cold water of the Yamuna is mixed with the hot spring water from the Surya Kund. And then it's very pleasant. It's like a sauna. And we noticed that this was the most popular place in the whole of Yamunotri. And it was even better attended than the temple. People would go to the temple, but it was so cold there that even though, you know, you had to move up, take off some of your clothes to get in, but still once you were in, it was so nice and comfortable. And everybody's mood was suddenly much better once we were there. So this is the Surya Kund. And near the Surya Kund, there is a Divya Shila, a stone, a slab, which you're supposed to worship before you start worshipping Yamuna's deity in the temple. Here's another. So there you are, the potatoes and the rice, and they keep that to boil it. So at Yamunotri, many great sages have come to perform austerities. The sage Asita was here. He lived here. Nityananda Prabhu came here as well. And even Yamaraj has come here and done penances here. The pujaris who serve the temple here, they're from the nearby village called Kharsali. And as I said, they live here. The temple is open from Akshay Tritiya to Diwali. And then from Diwali, because it gets cold, till Akshay Tritiya, everything is closed. And the whole place is just covered with ice and snow. It's completely desolate. But this village, Kharsali, the pujaris and their families continue to remain there. The whole region is cut off from the rest of the country, the rest of that area. But they remain there, isolated. If there's any medical emergency, they have no way to go anywhere. So some of our devotees went into this Kharsali village when we had gone there. And they spoke to the people living in that village who were essentially connected to this temple. And they saw that they didn't even have toilets in the house. So how do you manage, especially in winter? What do? You go out? Yes, we go out. He said, we carry, we can get ice, and then we heat it, and we go with a little pot out there, and by the time we go there, it's become ice again. So that's the way they live there. So he said, why don't you shift out in the winter? He said, no, we can never leave our Yamuna Maya, our mother Yamuna. We can never leave her at any time. We want to be with mother Yamuna, whatever it may be. Well, what do you do in medical emergencies? If something happens, what would you do? No, we are at the shelter of Yamuna. Whatever she wants with us, we are happy with that. So when we heard all these things, we were struck with wonder and, you know, this is the power of faith. So their devotion and their surrender to Yamuna and their shelter of Yamuna is so complete, it just made us feel so inadequate. We were all grumbling about the cold and about, you know, the food and what to do and let's, you know, but these people live here all their life and they were so happy doing that. So this is the Janaki Chatti. This is the place, the last place at which the vehicles can come, and then from there you have to trek up. And it's quite a nice trek up, uphill. And there are also little mules or ponies that these people, the local people have. And you can sit on the mules if you can't walk up. But actually, as some of our devotees discovered, these mules have this nasty habit of walking to the edge, right to the edge of the, you know, the road, right over the cliff. So their masters pull them again, but again they'll go right to the edge. I think they have this kind of mischievous streak in them. And invariably, those who are sitting on the mule preferred to walk even though they couldn't walk. Because after all, you know, they're mules, a little tip and down they go. So you're just looking down like that, they would feel dizzy. So they used to get off, they said, better we walk and tolerate the trouble of walking, but sitting on these mules is very, very difficult. So anyway, this is the start of the Yamuna River at Yamunotri. And it's one of the most memorable experiences of our lives. Most of the devotees who went to these places, they can't forget. Which is why I started off the talk yesterday with a disclaimer. Yes, you remember that there is a risk. The risk, over and above all the physical risks of toppling over the cliff and everything, is that you love it so much you won't want to come back. And actually many people feel like that. And as you go down and you see the course of the Yamuna, it really brings out the devotion in you. And you see there pristine and sublime as she flows down the cool, clear waters. What a contrast to what you see when she enters the plains and when human beings then contaminate her and pollute her. And we'll be talking about this aspect also later on. But anyway, here she's just crystal clear and water is sweet. It's very cold, but if you drink that water, it's like nectar. And then some of these, as we go, as she flows down the hills, you can see the terraced slopes. They have cut the slopes to make terraced farmland. And the farmers, as you go down, the villagers, they eke out their livelihood like that. And then as the Yamuna flows down the Himalayas, at a certain point in the same state of Uttarakhand, Uttarakhand is the one state there, in which all these four dhams are. It's called Dev Bhumi because it's full of these holy places of the Himalayas. So then a river called the Tons, which also comes from the Himalayas, it's a tributary. Actually, it carries more water than the Yamuna herself. So she comes and adds to the volume of the Yamuna. She meets the Yamuna at a certain point. This Tons River comes from the Sivalik range. And then the Yamuna increases in volume very substantially and she begins and continues her flow down. And then she enters into the plains and she goes past Kurukshetra. It was at this place that Yamuna Devi in her personified form had come to do austerities to get Lord Krishna as her husband. You know. And Kurukshetra is also, of course, famous for the place where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, the place where the Kauravas and Pandavas fought. So there's another view of the river Tons. Each of these places have a history and there's so much to talk about each place actually. And then flowing down, she crosses the place called Shukartal. And Shukartal is the place where the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Shukadev Goswami to King Parikshit. It's near Haridwar, near Meerut. It's somewhere in that region, in the modern state of Uttar Pradesh. So at Shukartal, she passes. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that Jiva Goswami says that when Parikshit Maharaj left home and he went to perform, he went on the bank of the Ganga, actually it was the bank of the Yamuna, not the bank of the Ganga, because it was a Yamuna that was flowing nearby. So from Shukartal, then she flows down and comes to, oh, now the problems start a little bit. She comes to the big cities. And even once Yamuna comes into the plains, then the contamination, the pollution, the diversion, all of that starts. It's such a pity. And then all the effluents, the sewage, the domestic sewage, the industrial effluents, they all are dumped into the Yamuna. Over the last few years, I believe the government has become very, very alert to this. They're trying their best to do it, but it's a Herculean task, very difficult. They are struggling to do whatever they can do. A lot of the water is diverted just before Delhi. Is diverted into agricultural fields and for consumption in the cities. And even Delhi takes up a lot of this. And all the effluents of Delhi then come into Yamuna. And then Yamuna comes into Vraj. About the pollution and everything, I'll talk about it because I don't want to spoil your mood talking about pollution right now, yes? So, she comes into Vraj, Vrajabhumi, the place of Lord Krishna. And this is her favorite place. And let's go through some of the places that she passes through when she comes into Braj area. There is a Ram Ghat. Ram Ghat is the place that's famous for Balaram's Rasa Leela. Lord Balaram also does his Rasa Leela, but that's different from Krishna's Rasa Leela. Balaram's gopis are different from Krishna's gopis. It's a different set. And the place where Balaram performed his Rasalila is different from the place where Krishna did his Rasalila. Krishna's Rasalila is in Vanshivat, that is in Yamuna, in Vrindavan proper. And Balaram's Rasalila happened in Ramghat. Krishna sent Balaram to console the gopis and the other Brajabasis who were lamenting or feeling great separation from Krishna when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura. And it is here at this time that Balaram did his Rasalila. And here also is the place where he wanted Yamuna to come close. Yamuna refused. So with his plow, he pulled her, made her into little branches, and then she came and begged forgiveness. Srila Jiva Goswami also says that actually this Kalindi who came here was an expansion of the original Kalindi and not Kalindi herself. So this is a topic, there's a lot to discuss here, but to save time I'll move on to the next place, which is Chirghat. This is the place where Krishna stole the clothes of the gopis. And close by is the Katyayana temple. And then the Kaliya Ghat. The Kaliya Ghat, of course, is very famous also. That's the place where he subdued, he jumped and subdued the Kaliya demon. And then Imlitala Ghat. Imlitala Ghat is also very interesting because at this place, a very interesting pastime happened. One time Srimati Radharani left the dancing arena and Krishna went searching for her and he came here at this point unable to find her. And feeling separation from Srimati Radharani, he began to chant the names of Srimati Radharani and something miraculous happened. His dark complexion turned into gold, golden color. So he became a golden Krishna. And when the gopis came looking for him, they found him there. They were perplexed. And Radharani asked him, "What's with this new complexion?" And then Krishna explained how he was chanting her names and how his complexion turned. And he took on the mood of Srimati Radharani feeling separation from Krishna. And then he told her that 4,500 years later, I will advent in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I will come with your mood and your complexion to feel the bliss of this separation from myself. And so that was some kind of prophecy about Krishna coming as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Also, this is the place where Srimati Radharani was coronated as the queen of Vrindavan. She became Vrindavaneshwari. This was soon after the Govardhan Leela when Indra and Surabhi crowned Krishna as Govinda, as the king of Vraja. The word ghat means that they are banks and there are usually steps that go down. They are on the banks of the river. So Keshi Ghat is the place where Krishna killed Keshi. And this is the only original ghat in Vrindavan that is still touched by the Yamuna all year round. The Yamuna has meandered and moved away from most of the ghats. So they are ghat for name, but the Yamuna actually doesn't touch those ghats. And this is one of the most famous ghats. And then Akrur Ghat, the place where Krishna showed Akrura his form as Lord Vishnu. Actually, the Yamuna has moved away almost 1.5 kilometers from this place. Mahaprabhu also stayed at Akrur Ghat. When he came to Vraj, he would stay there, and every day in the morning he would go to Imlitala and chant his japa there and then come back to Akrur Ghat. And then we have Vishram Ghat. The Vraj Parikrama usually begins here. And this is the place where Varahadev came to rest after killing Hiranyaksha. Bhumi Devi also came here to thank Varahadev. And interestingly, Krishna also took bath here after killing Kamsa. The deity of Yama, and we'll come to that maybe. Brahmand Ghat is where Krishna ate dirt. And Mother Yashoda asked him to open his mouth. Yes. And Yamuna and Yama deities, they are there at Vishram Ghat. It's very interesting. They are brothers and sisters. Yamuna and Yamaraj. They are siblings. They are twins. Children of the sun god Vivaswan. And it is at this place that when she called her brother Yamaraj to come, and then she cooked a nice meal for him, and Yamaraj was extremely happy. And he said, "What kind of benediction do you want from me?" And she said, "The benediction I want is that whoever comes on this particular day, which is the day after Deepavali, which is called the Bhratri Dvijiya or Bhai Dooj, they say in India, where brothers go and they're supposed to protect their sisters, and the sisters are supposed to pray for the welfare of their brothers." So she said that if the sisters and brothers, they come here and bathe in my waters on this day, then they will no longer be under your jurisdiction. And Yamaraj was surprised at this, and he said, "All right, granted." It's very interesting that even though they are twins, their functions are exactly the opposite. They're both great devotees of Krishna, and Yamaraj's unpleasant service to Krishna is to keep the living entities in this material world bound in the cycle of birth and death. He has to subdue them with the rod of punishment. He has to inflict the reactions of the karma of the living entities. So the sinful people have to be sent to the hellish planets and so on and so forth. Very, very unpleasant job he has to do. So his job is to punish people, sinful people, and keep them trapped in the cycle of birth and death. But Yamuna Devi's job is exactly the opposite. She undoes what her brother does. Of course, it's a common thing, you know that. Brothers, sisters keep quarreling. But this brother-sister pair doesn't quarrel. But they do that as a service to Krishna. So Yamaraj very happily gave that blessing. So on that day you'll find all the brothers and sisters in Braj, they come to Vishram Ghat to bathe. Yes, and now I'd like to sing a song, Yamunashtakam. Okay? This is a song composed by Rupa Goswami. Ashtakam means eight. Eight verses in this song. It's a very nice poem. And we'll read the translation first. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Suryadev, who saves one from having to enter the city of her brother Yamaraj, the sight of whom enables the most sinful persons to cross the ocean of sin, and the sweetness of whose water charms the hearts of everyone, always purify me. So we'll sing this and we'll sing one verse at a time. Okay?
Bhraturantakasya pattane bhipatti harini prekshayati papino pipapa sindhu tarini. Neeramadhuribhirapyashesha-chitta-bandhini Mampunatu sarvadaravinda-bandhu-nandini. Harivara-dharayabhimandito-rukhandava Pundarika Mandalodhya Danda Jali Tandava. Snana Kama Pama Rogra Papa Sampadandhini Mampunatu Sarvadara Vinda Bandhu Nandini. Thank you. शीकराभिमृष्ट जन्तु दुर्विपाक मर्दिनी नंद नंदनांतरंग भक्ति पूरवर्धिनी। तीर संगमाभिलाषी मंगलानुबंधिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। द्वीप चक्रवाल जुष्ट सप्त सिंधु भेदिनी श्री मुकुंद निर्मितोरु दिव्य केली वेदिनी। कांति कंदली भिरिंद्र नील वृंद निंदिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। माथुरेण मंडलेन चारुणाभिमंडिता प्रेम नद्ध वैष्णवाढ्यवर्धनाय पंडिता। ऊर्मि दोर्विलास पद्मनाभ पाद वंदिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। रम्य तीर रंभमाण गोकदंब भूषिता दिव्य गंध भाकदंब पुष्पराजि रूषिता। नंद सोनु भक्त संघ संगमाभिनंदिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। फुल्ल पक्ष मल्लिकाक्ष हंस लक्ष कूजिता भक्ति विद्ध देव सिद्ध किन्नराली पूजिता। तीर गंध वाह गंध जन्म बंध रंधिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। चिद्विलास वारिपुर भूर्भुवः स्वरापिनी कीर्तितापि दुर्मदोरु पापमर्मतापिनी। वल्लवेन्द्र नंद नंदनाग्र भंग गंधिनी मां पुनातु सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। दुष्ट बुद्धिरष्टकेन निर्मलोर्मि चेष्टिताम् त्वामनेन भानुपुत्रि सर्वदेव वेष्टिताम्। यस्तवीति वर्धवस्य सर्वपापमोचने भक्तिपूरमस्य देवि पुण्डरीकलोचने। मां पुनात सर्वदा रविंद बंधु नंदिनी। Maam punatu sarvadaravinda bandhu nandini.
So I'll read the translation of the other verses. I only read the translation of the first one. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, who decorates the great Khandava forest with a stream of pleasant waters, who is filled with lotus flowers and dancing birds, and who blinds the terrible sins of they who desire to bathe in her, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, a drop of whose water destroys the sinful reactions of the people, who creates a great flood of confidential pure devotional service to Lord Nandanandana, who brings auspiciousness to they who desire to live on her shore, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, who divides the seven oceans and seven continents, who witnessed many of Lord Mukunda's transcendental pastimes, and whose splendor rebukes a host of sapphires, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, who is decorated by the beautiful district of Mathura, who expertly protects they who follow the path of loving devotional service, and who with the playful motions of the waves that are her arms offers respectful obeisances to Lord Padmanabh's feet, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, whose charming shores are decorated with many loving cows, who is filled with many splendid and fragrant kadamba flowers, and who is delighted to have the company of Lord Krishna's devotees, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Deva, who is filled with the warblings of thousands of joyful Mallikaksha swans, who is worshipped by Vaishnavas, Devas, Siddhas and Kinnaras, and the slightest scent of the fragrant breeze moving on whose shores stops the cycle of repeated birth and death, always purify me. May Sri Yamuna, who is the daughter of Surya Dev, who is famous, splendid, who is the famous splendid spiritual river flowing through Bhu, Bhuva and Swaha planets, who burns away the greatest of sins, and who is fragrant with scented ointments from Lord Krishna's transcendental body, always purify me. O lotus-eyed one, O daughter of Surya Dev, O rescuer from all sins, please flood with pure devotional service that person who, reciting these eight prayers with a cheerful heart, glorifies you, whose waves are pure and splendid, and who is accompanied by all the demigods. Shri Yamunashtakam ki jai, Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaurnitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Yamuna Maya ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna, Ganga, Yamuna, He Yamune, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.